Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Hello, good evening, everybody, or wherever you are in the world. I hope you're having a great day. I am here with Professor David K. Johnson, Pulitzer Prize winner for his journalism, esteemed professor, expert in taxation law. And we are talking today about the Trump fire that has been burning the House ever since Elon tweeted about him being in the files. The fire has been burning. And it just will not, it just does not seem to go away. We're getting story after story. And today's story is that the Epstein estate will hand the birthday book at the center of Trump defamation case to Congress. Representative Garcia of California said the estate will comply with a subpoena and turn over the book and other documents, including the infamous birthday book, at the center of the defamation case with the Wall Street Journal. And he also said that we finally got word from the Epstein estate. We're going to be providing the actual Epstein book. The Epstein estate is actually going to actually now get us that book and a bunch of other documents that they have that's actually not being reported yet. And this, the birthday book, if you're not familiar, it's the subject of the Wall Street Journal article concerning an allegedly bawdy birthday message from Trump to Jeffrey, which Trump has asserted does not exist. Trump countered with a $10 billion defamation lawsuit against Rupert Murdoch, the paper, and its parent company, Dow Jones, and the journalists whose bylines appeared on the piece. Anyway, the House committee hopes to examine the book of messages from friends and associates, which was a gift to Jeffrey for his 50th birthday, compiled by Ghislaine. And we will be getting to all of these subjects forthwith. Huge thank you for coming on, Professor, and I've been watching your work and listening fascinated at talking about everything from, you know, Iran versus Israel to what's going on with Trump and Maxwell and the DOJ, etc. And when did you first become interested in the Epstein case?
Oh, that's been around for a long time. Julie Brown at the Miami Herald has been working on this for years, and the Miami Herald has done, hands down, the very best work on Epstein. So the significance of the Epstein case to Donald, who your audience should know, I have covered him longer than any other journalist since 1988, and in fact, I wrote in 1988 about him becoming president of the United States. The Epstein case has always been a major liability for Donald Trump. And that's why he's gone from promising voters in the election that he would release all the Epstein files to asserting now it's a hoax. It's a hoax. Keeping the Epstein story alive with new developments is the crucial thing here. For those people who don't have gray hair like me, Watergate didn't happen overnight. It took 2.5 years, basically, for that to play out. And things take time. But if there's nowhere to go with the story, it just dies. For example, House Democrats, after a huge court fight, got 6 years of Donald Trump's tax returns from the Internal Revenue Service. There's a law that says anytime, it's been on the books for about 90 years, anytime certain congressional committees ask for the tax return of anybody, it must be provided. And it always has been, without question, until Donald Trump. And when the documents were finally turned over and they established something I've written about extensively, that Donald Trump is a annual tax cheat, that he's committed such huge tax crimes, he easily qualifies for criminal prosecution. And I even wrote a roadmap for in a New York Daily News a Sunday editorial for Alvin Bragg on how to prosecute Donald Trump for felony tax crimes at the state level. It got almost no publicity, no coverage, very few stories, because the documents were released on December 30th when all the senior journalists are off and the junior ones don't have enough knowledge to write about it with any particular depth. So there's a great deal about Donald Trump that I'm aware of that is in the public record, but people don't know much about. And the Epstein case is largely unknown. Survey data is showing among American citizens, unless they're news junkies, but it is the most likely thing to end Trump's presidency, because Trump can survive 30,000 lies in his first term. He can survive atrocious decisions about his appointees, but I do not believe he can survive clear evidence that he is a serial child rapist. He, of course, denies anything like that, but there's such an abundant record of his comments about underage girls. For example, on the despicable and disgusting Howard Stern show, he was asked, well, you know, how young is too young? And he said 12 years old. He, as the owner of one of several beauty pageants, bragged about walking in on the naked and half naked, his words, not mine, 14-year-old girl contestants, claiming it was his right. He was doing an inspection because he owns the pageant. There's videotape of him talking about on more than one occasion how he would be dating his daughter Ivanka if she wasn't his daughter. And if you watch those videotapes and focus on her reactions, it's very clear how uncomfortable she is. And there have been psychiatrists and psychologists who've analyzed that, who work with family incest. And they, not me, they have drawn very dark conclusions about what Donald Trump did with his daughter when she was a teenager. And, of course, there are lots of photographs of the two of them that I think most parents, certainly most mothers, if they saw their husband in poses like that with their young daughters, would have severe negative reactions. In fact, I've had women tell me I'd lock the doors, change the locks, and he would never set foot in the house again. Just overseeing some of these photographs where he's touching Ivanka in ways that I think a great many people, not everybody, but a great many people would find to be completely inappropriate. So the Epstein files are very important. And I've followed this off and on since Julie Brown started really digging into this in the Miami Herald and discovered the cover-up that took place in 2006-07 under Alex Acosta, who was the George W. Bush administration's U.S. attorney in Miami, and gave a sweetheart deal to Epstein. No federal charges. One state charge to a relatively minor felony. He only had to sleep in a jail cell at night. He was given a release every day to go to his Palm Beach mansion and engage in business. And frankly, I don't think there's any reason to think he wasn't engaging in raping underage girls during those times. And it did not get hardly any coverage at the time. And then finally, one of the important aspects of this is, you know, there are at least two dozen women now in their 30s and 40s who have told about being raped by Epstein and or Donald Trump. Some of them, we have videotape of them talking about it. So there's lots and lots of very, very black smoke billowing out of the White House and Mar-a-Lago about this. What we don't have is absolute proof. Well, among the things that were seized in Jeffrey Epstein's five different properties were extensive CDs that are believed to contain videos and still pictures. And the release of those might prove beyond a doubt what was going on with Donald Trump and underage girls. By the way, when Donald owned casinos, he plied children as young as 12 years old, if they had money to gamble, giving them liquor, limousines, and hotel suites. And when I asked Donald about this back almost 40 years ago, he just said, flat in emotion, "I paid a fine." You know, not, "Oh, that was a mistake. Oh, that shouldn't have happened. You know, I feel terrible. I paid a fine."
All right, viewers, I just want to, if you're watching live right now, I'm going to put the professor's links in the live chat. We've got his website, his Twitter handle, and Amazon author page. So please support his important work. If you're watching on replay, all of the links are in the description box. So, you know, a lot of this stuff then, we've seen over the years, allegations against him, attacks against him. They just seem to have made him more popular, and all of a sudden it's completely reversed because of the Epstein story, which is 5 or 6 years old in itself. What is different this time? Are you saying that it's because of what he could potentially come out about him that is making it different this time?
No, it's about Donald's own making a promise to voters. I will release the Epstein files. He created this. Had he not foolishly said, as soon as I'm in the White House, we'll release the Epstein files. And then remember all the lies that followed. So Pam Bondi says, "Oh, I have them right on my desk right now." And then she says, "There's nothing there." Donald Trump's personal lawyer, who Todd Blanche, who is the number two person at the Justice Department, then goes to interview Ghislaine Maxwell. And we now have what took place in that meeting. And it is the most obviously orchestrated, "Are you going to be a danger to Donald?" And she gets moved from the high level, high security prison where we send sexual predators, because she's a rapist and a procurer. She was primarily the procurer, but clearly she was also a rapist, and she's a perjurer. She was removed to a low security prison. Now, under the principles of the Bureau of Prisons, she shouldn't be there because she's a threat to other prisoners. She is a violent predator. And in the Justice Department actions here, notice that there's not one word about the victims. Federal law requires prosecutors to address the concerns of victims. There's not a word about that. It's all about her. And when Ghislaine Maxwell was convicted, Donald was asked at a presser what he thought about that or had to say. And he said, I wish her well. Name me one high-level American politician who has said about a sexual predator's conviction, "I wish that person well." All of that just adds to the evidence that, of course, Donald Trump was routinely raping 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old girls, but we do not have absolute proof of it, and he continues to deny it, and yet there's good reason to think the absolute proof is in the possession of the Trump administration. And it may well be that the estate lawyers have this material. One of the other, you know, misguidances that have taken place, the Trump administration saying, "Well, there's no list." Pam Bondi said, after she said there was a list and she had it, "There's no list." That's a really good diversionary comment for the, as Donald loves to say, poorly educated who form the base of his support. You don't need a list that says this client, this date, like one might keep in a calendar book, to know who the people were. What you need to know is who came to visit and what records do you have of them. And we also need to be pressing to get the financial records. Epstein, who taught at a private school, and where he was hired by former Attorney General Bill Barr's father, was dismissed. He briefly worked on Wall Street at Bear Stearns. There's no reason to think he is some sort of magical genius on Wall Street. And yet Les Wexner, the multi-billionaire founder of The Limited, owns Victoria's Secret and a whole bunch of other retail brands, turned over much of his finances to Jeffrey Epstein. He gave Epstein apparently several hundred million dollars a year. He signed a power of attorney that gave enormous authority to Epstein. Epstein ended up owning his mansion, which at the time was the single most expensive house in Manhattan, or home of any kind, apartment, townhouse, et cetera, the single most expensive home in Manhattan. Now, if in fact Epstein was an unrecognized genius in investing, then there will be records of trades, purchases, monthly statements sent to Les Wexner, distributions to Mr. Wexner from the profitable trades that were made over more than a decade. On the other hand, if in fact Jeffrey Epstein was an extortionist and his game was to get people into compromising positions, make photographs or videos of them in compromising positions, and then extract money from them, the records will show something else. They won't show any trades. And here's one way to think about that. Imagine, Sean, that you were worth billions of dollars and your enterprises were earning billions of dollars in profits. And you had been caught on videotape with a, no question, 13-year-old girl having sex. How much would you pay in blackmail? I guess hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
Yeah, and if you listened to the part of the interview with the Maxwell, 6 hours of it, where she was asked about the money that was transferred to Jeffrey from Black and also the property from Wexner. And her explanation was that it was in lieu of these brilliant financial services
right
that Jeffrey had rendered for these people. What did you make of that?
Well, Mr. Black, who founded the Apollo Group and who I've written about as far back as almost 40 years ago, he doesn't need advice from anybody. He is an absolute master of how to make money. And Jeffrey Epstein, I can't imagine Jeffrey Epstein even being able to get an appointment with him. I called Black once on his phone number, and his first comment was, "How'd you get my phone number?" And I said, "I'm an investigative reporter. This is what I do for a living. But I really would like us to talk." And we spoke for a bit. But Ghislaine Maxwell is not to be believed on anything she says. I mean, we know that she's a convicted perjurer. She has made all sorts of comments that have nothing to do with the facts. But she has every incentive to position herself through her lawyer, who is a close personal friend of Todd Blanche, the former Trump lawyer who's now number two at the Justice Department, to get not a pardon. It would be very foolish of Donald Trump to give her a pardon. He will give her clemency. That is, he'll release her from prison for time served. If he gives her a pardon, she can be called before any magistrate or congressional committee and ordered to tell the truth and produce documents. If she refuses and she has a pardon, she can go to prison for that. So it would be very foolish. But by giving clemency, Donald Trump would be able to insulate himself because she could take the Fifth Amendment against self-incrimination if called by Congress. So don't expect a pardon if Donald acts. Expect clemency.
So if the first error was to say that there's no files, move on, and they received this huge backlash because of that, and now they're scrambling to try and make things better. Isn't it a second huge error? I mean, she is the poster child for these heinous crimes. To give her a pass for that, wouldn't that just cause another huge backlash? It's such a slap in the face of the survivors.
Well, I would expect if there's clemency, it'll be way down the road. It's not going to be in the short term. Now, remember, Donald, and I've been warning people of this since 2011 because I've spent hundreds of hours with him. I, at the time of his first term, I had with what was without a doubt the largest collection of Trump documents in the world, tens of thousands of pages. May not be anymore, given the work the Washington Post and especially the New York Times have done. They might have more than I do now. But Donald is always thought of himself as dictator. He has been talking about being president way back to when I wrote about it in 1988. And I wrote about it because I thought it was a possibility because he's such a good con artist. I've exposed a lot of con artists in my career, which goes back to the 60s. Donald is in a class all by himself as a con artist. Absolutely brilliant. I admire him in that sense, the same way that I once spent several hundred hours interviewing a mob hitman and who was never arrested for any crime and who the cops all spoke of, oh, hey, how's Harry? Love to see Harry. What's Harry doing these days? FBI agents as well. And everything that guy told me, they verified. And so, yeah, you had to admire this guy. He's committing horrible crimes, but he's doing it in a very professional sort of way. And when it comes to being a con artist, Donald is just, he's extraordinary in his ability to fool people. But remember, at every rally, he says, we love the poorly educated. And he's always thought of himself as he is special. He's the only person who should be president. Everybody else is an idiot. He calls anybody who disagrees with him an idiot, a fool, a stupid person, a slow person. But he's really talking about himself. Because Donald, here's how appallingly ignorant Donald Trump is. He did not know what happened on December 7, 1941 at Pearl Harbor, a date that will live in infamy. He had to have it explained to him during his first term by his chief of staff, retired Marine General Kelly. Donald thought that Frederick Douglass, who's buried about 2 miles from where I'm talking to you from, was alive. He died in 1895. He thought Finland was part of Russia. Donald doesn't know anything, but he claims to be the world's greatest expert on 22 subjects. One of those subjects I have a worldwide reputation on, taxes. And when Donald sued my former New York Times colleague, Tim O'Brien, over his book, Trump Nation, where against my advice, Tim put a figure on Donald's wealth, 140 to 160 million, if I recall correctly, or that neighborhood. And I had said to Tim, if you put a specific number on it, he's going to sue you. Well, Trump did. And thank goodness Tim O'Brien dismissed my bad advice. Because as a result of that lawsuit, Donald was questioned under oath and he was asked, so Mr. Trump, what do you know about accounting? I don't know anything about accounting. You know anything about accounting? And for page after page of the transcript, the lawyers tie him down so he can never say, oh, yeah, I understand accounting. Got absolute unqualified, knows nothing of accounting. To become the tax reporter at the New York Times, where I won a Pulitzer and was a finalist 3 other times, and then become a professor of law, even though I'm not a lawyer, I had to teach in the graduate school of business, which is an accounting school at Syracuse University, I had to learn accounting. Accounting and tax are so intermingled, you cannot possibly understand tax without understanding accounting. It's all a fraud by Donald. He doesn't know more than the generals about ISIS. He doesn't know more about taxes than anyone else in the history of the world. That's his claim, by the way. Greatest expert on 22 subjects. And that people believe this, that's a testament to his extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary skill as a con artist.
You got a few people in the chat asking, why is Trump so beholden to Israel? And does that tie in with the Epstein story?
Well, there's a lot of reason to think that Jeffrey Epstein did work freelance for Mossad, the Israeli principal intelligence service. Donald is not particularly different from any other president. I mean, Joe Biden, while implying that he was acting to stop the violence against children, the disabled, the elderly, and women in Gaza, we now know was not. And that's where during the campaign, Kamala Harris, who is vice president, can't go against the president, was trying to show people there's a little, you know, I don't think like the president does, but I support his policy so long as I'm his vice president. And that message did not get through. She's since made it clear that she would have stepped in right away and said, you want any more help from the U.S.? You stop killing people left and right in Gaza. Donald doesn't know anything about the dispute. And lo and behold, or the long history of this. I mean, just not just to the Nakba in 1948, but the whole long history of the Middle East. Donald doesn't know a Sunni from a Shia. I don't expect most Americans need to know what the difference is between a Sunni and a Shia. But if you're the president of the United States, you damn well better know with a pretty sophisticated appreciation of that. What does Donald say about Gaza? Oh, we're going to take it over and turn it into a Mediterranean resort. You know, you have to understand he's a completely ignorant man. And so it's easy to manipulate him. And I don't think that his dealings with Netanyahu, who, remember, is literally on trial for criminal conduct. He had to, before the trial broke, spend 6 hours a day at his trial. Netanyahu is trying to stay in power, and the best way for him to stay in power is to pursue his lifelong hatred of Palestinians. And if you doubt he has a lifelong hatred, go back and find the videos from when he was a young man, his hair was all black, and how he talked about Palestinians. It was just formally civil, but you can see that underneath he's seething. And so I don't think on that issue he's different. Now, Russia is a different matter. The Russians have been courting Donald as a government on way back to the old Soviet. 1987, they gave him an all-expenses-paid luxury tour of parts of Russia, principally St. Petersburg, or the old Leningrad, and Moscow. When Trump Tower opened up, technically in November of 1983, but as a practical matter in 1984, it was one of only two luxury high-rise apartment buildings in Manhattan that would sell to anybody. You go to any other building in Manhattan, my wife and I own a tiny studio apartment in Manhattan, and we had to go before a co-op board, which can kick you out for any reason, and persuade them they should let us buy this little tiny 224 square foot unit. Any building they would, if you went to Donald's building and said, I want to buy this unit and you want $4 million for it, and Donald would say, I want $5 million from you, they'd pay it. If you said to him, by the way, I want you to title the building as Snow Inc., you or I would say, I'm sorry, is that a cocaine trafficking business or is that a ski lodge in Colorado? Donald would never ask that. One guy came to the closing with literal paper bags of cash for the closing. Not a check. It's what you usually think of when you say I paid cash, you got a wire transfer or a check. No, literal paper bags. The building was so full of criminals that it was well known to the FBI, to the New York PD, Organized Crime Bureau, to the to Interpol, to other law enforcement agencies, because there were so many criminals in the building. A 24-hour-a-day full-blown casino operated for years in the apartment immediately below Trump's. And when they got busted and $20 million was seized, Trump went, I had no idea. You can't get up in the high floors of that building without going through an elevator system that where Donald is in control of who gets up there. It should have made him subject to a lot of attention at that point just for that. So Donald has spent his entire life dealing with criminals, especially Russians. One Russian bought 5 apartments in Trump Tower early on. In 2008, Eric asked about, well, wait a minute, American banks, and with one exception, European banks won't loan to you anymore because you have a habit of not paying back your loans. And Eric said, oh, we're getting all the financing we need out of Russia. Reuters has documented how in more than 100 transactions, Russians paid premium prices to Trump for apartments.
Wasn't that what he fell out with Epstein over? Was he went behind Epstein's back and sold a property Epstein wanted to a Russian oligarch?
Well, yeah, the story is more complicated than that. There is a mansion that was built on the island where Donald Trump, Jeffrey Epstein, the third Koch brother, Bill Koch, and the very successful crime novelist. His name just went out of my head. He's the number one successful crime novelist in the country. All have big mansions. And these people built the most unbelievable god-awful mansion. It makes 1950s Texas oil millionaires look like they had taste. Donald it was worth probably about $30 million just for the land value, because nobody's going to keep that property. Donald sold it to Ribolovlev, who is part of the Putin oligarch crowd. There are two sets of oligarchs in Russia, the ones from pre-Putin and then Putin's gang, who are the most well-financed criminal gang in the world, and they are busy committing white-collar crimes, upsetting governments all over the world. They are a major threat to freedom and liberty.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. Social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Epstein certainly was interested in it, but Donald acquired the property, and then when he was in serious financial trouble and needed $40 million to pay Deutsche Bank over his Chicago high-rise hotel and apartment tower, Ribolovlev steps in and buys it from him for $100 million, including commission, about three times what it's worth. When this gets out in the news, Ribolovlev puts out a statement saying he was hiding money from his wife, who he was in the process of divorcing. Well, think about that for a minute, Sean. You want to hide money from your wife in a divorce. Why would you pay three times the value of a property? You might as well take $70 million and go to the beach and have a bonfire with the dollar bills. It makes no sense whatsoever. But journalists who don't know anything about finance, who don't think with sufficient skepticism, they are expert at accurately quoting what people say. And they'll accurately reflect what was said. And they did. That's the story that got out there. Even though anybody who knows anything about money at all would go, wait a minute, that makes no sense.
And then Epstein went public with that, did he?
That's correct. But it had like zero impact. But everywhere you look with Donald, one way or another, you will come to Russia. It's why he has to keep saying it's a hoax. And that he says the Epstein matter involving underage girls is a hoax tells you how far he will go. He just knows that works. See, it worked with Russia. A lot of people think there was the whole Russiagate was a hoax. Therefore, I'll get it to work with this. It's not going to work this time.
Well, a few people are asking about and we've had some people on have previously talked about the consortium of banks that bailed him out.
Yes.
And what wasn't the majority of them linked to Israel?
I covered that. And what happened is Donald Trump owned three casinos in Atlantic City. The state of New Jersey position was that Atlantic City casinos are the most highly regulated industry in the history of the world. I even got one of them to say, yes, more highly regulated than nuclear power plants. And all I can say is God save us if that's the case, because I wrote a book called Temples of Chance showing what a fraud the casino regulation was. It was a protection racket for the owners. So Donald, who claimed to be worth, he told me one day he was worth $3 billion. And when I told him I didn't believe him and explained why, As a reporter with seven, about to be eight children, I paid all my bills on time, and he had hundreds of vendors who were unpaid. He was so stung by that that later in the day, he told another reporter he was worth $5 billion. Somehow his real estate grew by two-thirds in value in a matter of hours. What he did was he got the state of New Jersey Casino Control Commission to take his side against his bankers. And the bankers, looking at the prospect of owning expensive hotels, three of them, on the Jersey Shore without casino licenses, which would make them worth nothing, relatively nothing, decided that they would knuckle under. And Trump had to reveal then, I had written months earlier that Trump was not a billionaire or anywhere close to it from his own personal financial statement. He had to produce documents showing he had a negative net worth of over $300 million, or as I wrote at the time, you are probably worth more than Donald Trump. This is part of a long history of Donald. He doesn't pay people what he owes them. He hired hundreds of illegal immigrants to tear down the Bonwit Teller department store so he could build Trump Tower. His golf courses and the family winery and all these other businesses are full of people who are here illegally, as Donald likes to say, as opposed to undocumented. He came up with a ruse when he was president to deny the hiring of locals to work at Mar-a-Lago, who would principally be black, as service staff, and instead bring people from overseas, because, of course, they're on a visa and they would be under his complete control. You do something I don't like, fine, you're out of here, go back to Mexico. He doesn't honor contracts. He is the third generation head of a four generation white collar crime family. There are a number of these families in America. They differ from the mafia and other organized crime in that they don't break legs, they don't kill people. They instead cheat with promises they don't fulfill, lies, contracts they don't honor, failures to pay, and using a form of blackmail against people. Not payoffs like I suspect Epstein received, but instead they find out some peccadillo in your life. So, Sean, you're the person who can control whether I get a permit for this building, and you had an affair. And lo and behold, my detectives know that. And, well, I can tell your wife about it, or you can approve my project, pal. That kind of extortion. And we in America, you know, we pour enormous resources. I teach, among other subjects, criminal justice. We pour enormous resources into street crime, blue-collar crime. We have police cars drive around patrolling the streets, an utter waste of time, money, and gasoline. But we put very few resources into white-collar crime, which is economically 20 times as damaging, 20 times. And so all sorts of people just run free, stealing and ripping people off and impoverishing people, because instead of hiring forensic accountants and lawyers who understand money, we keep hiring men and women in blue suits to drive around in patrol cars. And so Donald's one of the big beneficiaries of this. And when he's gone, the family tradition, I'm certain, will continue if our policies don't change, of the Trump white-collar crime family proceeding.
So how do you see the Epstein story playing out from here? Could it bring the whole house down, or will it just burn out?
It is the most vulnerable thing Donald has. So the trick here is to keep that story alive. As I mentioned earlier, Watergate took 2.5 years. And I had a little tiny piece of the Watergate story back then, even though I was in the Lansing Bureau of the Detroit Free Press. I found a way to get a piece of it. But you have to keep the story alive. In the movie made on the Clancy book, Patriot Games, there's a scene very early on in the Oval Office where the Jack Ryan character is sitting there, and the staff is saying, what do we do about the fact that the president's friend has turned out to be a major drug trafficker, big real estate mogul? And everybody's saying, well, you know, we shut it off and whatnot. And he says, and the Jack Ryan character says, no. You say, oh, my friend, my very good friend, my best friend. Why? because then the journalists have nowhere to go. So the trick to keeping the Epstein story going is more leaks, more interviews, more examples of evidence. It doesn't take much to make a story, you know, one document. That's why I think that the next strategy should be to get the financial records of the Leslie Wexner account and any others, because anybody looking at it will tell very quickly, was he in fact this investment genius or was this an extortion racket? And if it is an extortion racket, the next thing you do is to call Les Wexner in and put him under oath. And if necessary, grant him immunity. And so his choice is you tell the truth, no matter how painful to you, or we're going to get you sent to prison. Related to that, because the Justice Department is under Trump's control, is state attorneys general. And that's the right phrasing people should know. It isn't attorney generals. It's state attorneys general need to be developing their own cases. And some of them are, in fact, working on this. They have a working group that talks every day, apparently, in the morning on the phone. But we need to have a strategy because Trump can't do anything about a state conviction of someone. Pardon and clemency are only for offenses against the federal government. Keep in mind, how, by the way, that if Trump gets removed from office before the end of his term, the person we get is just as bad as he is, just as lacking in morals and principles, J.D. Vance.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Boardwalk Empire meets House of Cards, isn't it?
It's very good. That's very good. Boardwalk Empire meets House of Cards. I was a consultant to House of Cards because my youngest child was the junior person in the writer's room on that show.
Wow. So who told Acosta to give Jeffrey his sweetheart deal?
Well, I don't know if anybody had to tell Acosta. One of the great questions would be, did somebody have something on Acosta or someone close to him or around him? Or did he get some other favor and it may not have been financial? I mean, we don't know what happened there. What we know is there's never been a deal, anything like this. And there have to be people in the Justice Department who know what went on and who can talk about it. They're not going to come forward and talk any more than more of the women who Donald Trump assaulted over the years are going to come forward, unless they feel A, safe, and B, that something will happen. And, you know, I've interviewed a number of women Donald asked out when he was a young man, right? He is given a college degree he didn't earn. He's hardly ever on campus, and he studied in the real estate department in the undergraduate program at Penn. He likes people to think he went to the graduate business school. And the overwhelming word that women who went out with him have used to me to describe him is creep. And you'll notice Manhattan at the time that happened, Donald's in his early 20s. He's over 6 feet tall. He's not overweight. He's reasonably good looking blonde guy. And he had to go to Montreal where he found a hard-drinking, fake Czech Olympic skier who was a runway model. Very low, bottom-of-the-barrel work. You know, in a department store, you come out and show fashions in the dining room where ladies who have lunch are meeting. He couldn't get anybody to marry him in a city that's crawling with women looking for somebody who's got a lot of money and who will put up with all sorts of characters to have a nice position. He couldn't do it. And it speaks volumes about, you know, who and what he is that the public doesn't see. All these people who think he's a business genius. If they had knowledge of business and they watched episodes of The Apprentice, The Celebrity Apprentice, they would go, as you know, I taught in graduate business school, I've written about business for decades. They would go, that's not how business is done. This is some nutty fantasy version of stuff that has nothing to do with reality. Like most reality shows, it's anti-reality. So the Epstein matter is the most vulnerable, the greatest vulnerability Trump has. He's more vulnerable on that than the national security secrets that he's given away, including sources and methods. That's how did we learn this and who did we learn it from, that he gave to the Russians. We know he gave to the Russians. It's too far from the lives of most people. The Epstein event is visceral. People get that. You know, men, you're in my age, and 13-year-old girls, audiences get that.
So if Maxwell has got compromat on people, how she got this far? I mean, Jean-Luc Brunel ended up the same way as Jeffrey, but in a French prison.
Right.
Yet she's now holding court with the DOJ, getting a soft prison, and it looks like she's going to get out early. How she managed to get this far, not ended up like the other two?
Well, because Donald recognizes that the biggest threat to him is what's in the Epstein files. And so he needs to find out, are you my friend or are you my enemy? Can I trust you? And moving her to a much nicer prison, we used to call them club feds, as in Club Med, the resorts, is an indication that they're somewhat at least trusting her for the time being with her 20-year sentence. And, you know, remember, Donald Trump, who runs as Mr. Law and Order, pardoned people who physically assaulted and tried to kill police officers, tried to kill his own vice president. There's no moral issue here with Donald. This is all practical transaction. Donald's a very transactional person. Everything is a transaction. You and I, and even members of his own family, are not people. We are objects. Donald has no empathy. He has no ability to connect with other people in any way. It's a tragedy, by the way. I look at Donald's life, and I've studied him all these years, as I have three other very prominent Americans. I've written about at great length. And, you know, I have people send me emails or letters in the mail, and they'll say, you're just jealous because he has such a beautiful life and he has so much money. Trust me, I'm not the least bit jealous. Donald Trump has never known love, contentment. He will die an empty vessel, trying desperately to fill the emptiness inside from his horrible, unbelievably horrible emotional abuse when he was growing up. With either claims of wealth, although he is now, through extortion as president, a multi-billionaire finally, and claims that he's the great Don Juan of all history and the King Midas. Of course, Trump has no idea that both the stories of both Don Juan and King Midas are tragedies. You know, Midas, everything he touched turned to gold. And what did he touch but his daughter, whom he loved more than anything else? Ghislaine Maxwell, if she were to turn on Trump, would be a real danger. That's why she won't get a pardon. There's no possibility she'll get a pardon. Clemency, yes. Pardon, no. But the documents, you don't need her for that. The documents are in the possession of the Justice Department, which is absolutely free to release these documents. There's nothing preventing the Justice Department from releasing the documents and the estate. Now, in addition to that, I think there's good reason to believe that other law enforcement agencies have files and records. And that's where it's really important that Congress pursue this. And unfortunately, there are some Republicans who are trying to hold Donald to his promise of releasing this, and they're rather upset about this. And those Republicans who continue to defend Donald on this haven't very carefully thought through what happens if we get irrefutable evidence that Donald Trump is a child rapist. Because they're not going to look good at all, and they're going to be very vulnerable to a smart challenger in the next election.
So why do you think Maxwell hasn't been disappeared if she's such a threat to these people?
Because that's not how you do those things. That's Hollywood stuff. You know, Hollywood did a movie starring George Clooney about a lawyer who goes around killing witnesses or having them killed. That's not how that works. The law school where I taught, they had to have a lecture for every student explaining that's not what you do. You want to bury people in paperwork. You want to do all sorts of other strategies, but you go around killing people. That makes no sense. The stakes are completely out of proportion if you get caught, which you're almost certain to be. Now Epstein's death is another matter. We know from the investigation by Wired magazine and the one by CBS that the tape that was released was crudely edited, apparently 3 to 5 times, depending on which of the sources you go to. and that it was 2 minutes and 57 seconds that are missing. And Maxwell did say in the 6 hours with Todd Blanche that she doesn't believe he committed suicide. Other events going on suggest that he didn't commit suicide. He set up a financial entity 2 days before this, and his ego was so huge. People with egos like that don't tend to kill themselves unless they have some seemingly noble reason. There's very good reason to think that Ken Lay, who ran Enron, induced his own heart attack that killed him, which prevented making his conviction stand because he hadn't been sentenced, and saved his family financially. If that's what happened, it makes sense. I can see that. But nothing about Epstein. He doesn't have a family to protect. He's just him. And getting to the truth about what happened there should be one of the principal goals if we get Democratic majority in the House, the Senate, or both, starting in January of 27.
Enron, the biggest financial contributors to the Bush crime family at one point in time. So, you know, you touched on Wexner, etc. Do you think in the Epstein case anyone will ever be held to account that was more powerful than Epstein, Wexner's, the Blacks of the world?
Now, let me be clear. Les Wexner, who said almost nothing about this, says, "I never did anything wrong whatsoever." We need to be clear about that. The only way there will be accountability is either the Democrats get a majority in the House or the Senate and therefore can conduct investigations, and they will. They are very clear about that. They will do that if they get majorities, which is why Trump is trying so hard to get districts redrawn, to stop mail-in voting, to do anything he can to protect his position. And secondly, there may be somewhere a state investigation that can be undertaken. I'm surprised that Alvin Bragg, who has evidence that Donald Trump is a serial felonious tax cheat, has not gone back and prosecuted him again. But, you know, he's a politician. Like all politicians, they wake up in the morning, wet their finger, and see which way the wind is blowing. And while the wind is blowing against Donald, especially in Manhattan, there are also risks. And you can be seen as overreaching. But I think there's a very good chance that that will happen. The thing we have to worry about is that Donald declared himself to be America's dictator on February 26th, just 5 weeks into his term. He put out a statement, a quote wrongly attributed to Napoleon Bonaparte and others. "He who saves his nation violates no law." 3 days later, the White House posted at three different websites, social media sites, an AI image of Donald in a royal British crown. If there's anything that is blasphemy in our secular country, it's that. And of course, Donald has run all these ads and promos about him being president forever in the future. He has said, "You won't need to hold any elections if you just get me back in office in 24. Donald is perfectly capable, if he can get the military behind him, to seize full power. What he's doing right now, Sean, is consolidating his power. He's eliminated inspectors general, most of them, not all of them, but all ones that were a threat to him or Elon Musk. He has complete control of the Justice Department, which is now his personal law firm for retribution and defense for himself. He has put utterly incompetent people in charge of our national security, defense, and health and human services. So Donald, because he has no moral core of any kind, is perfectly capable of taking really severe action. And I believe that the use of troops on the streets in L.A. and Washington, and they are doing preparation to go into Boston and to Chicago. All, by the way, cities with people of color as mayors, and Democratic cities, because almost all cities of any size are Democratic in this country. Those are just test runs to see what he can do. If you're listening to this and you are in the military, I'd point out to you something very important. the Nuremberg trials. You can't say I was just following orders. If you are a sailor or an airman or a grunt in the Army, you take an oath to follow the orders of the president and to support the Constitution. You do not take an oath to follow orders that are illegal. But if you are an officer in the U.S. military or an officer in any capacity in the United States, you only take an oath to uphold the Constitution. It is your duty to not carry out wrongful orders. And I would argue it is your duty to make a clear record, if necessary, a loud public record to anybody under your command, whether you're military command or civilian, that these things would be illegal. And those people who violate that, if we have a change in administration, if we get out of this and our democracy endures, they should expect that they will be prosecuted and they will go to prison, or if they're in the military, the brig. The most important things going on right now, Sean, are coming up with new information, new revelations to keep the Epstein story alive. That was critical in Watergate. The LA Times, where I worked later, broke many of the biggest Watergate stories that people wrongly think the Washington Post broke. The Washington Post did great work, but the LA Times did extraordinary work all the way through as well. And a lot of Washington Post stories were leveraged off of LA Times stories. We need to have enough organizations digging into what's going on here. And we need less of the unthinking coverage that we saw when Ribolovlev got Donald Trump out of his useless mansion property and got him the $40 million he needed to pay the bank loan that was coming due. Much more skeptical thinking about this and news organizations to back up their staffs.
So why have the banks paid such astronomical sums to Epstein survivors? I mean, what's the role of the banks in this? Hundreds of millions.
Yeah. Well, because the clearly what's in the files that we have not all seen that are the civil files show the banks were complicit. Banks in the U.S., whether federally chartered or state, and all of the banks that I'm aware of in the Epstein case are federally chartered, are subject to lots of rules and regulation. I used to teach regulation from the ancient world. How did we get regulation today? Started 4,000 years ago. And bankers who facilitated criminal conduct, bankers who did not follow the requirements to know your customer, they are vulnerable. And the banks are very tough on this on ordinary issues. My wife and I used to have an overdraft account in case we screwed up our checking account. And my wife didn't put her version of the document for our joint account in the mail. And we were barred from not only from that account, but we were told we can never have it again. A little kind of annoying because the rules can be very harsh. And that's a simple legal algebra. Once presented with the evidence of their complicity and their see no evil approach to the Epstein matter, lawyers told the bank executives, if we go to trial with these very sympathetic defendants, rape victims in some cases, then our exposure would be not the hundreds of millions we've paid, but billions of dollars. It's just a financial decision. That's what most settlements are. And unfortunately, we allow settlements to be sealed even when they are over things like pharmaceuticals that turned out not, you know, have problems that weren't caught during development, which means other people get sick or die. I have a real problem with that. The Seattle Times did a big investigation of this 25 years ago, documenting harms done by allowing sealing of these cases. But if I were the bankers in the current environment, and if I were a lawyer, not just a law professor, I would certainly have told my client, look, you know, you can settle this for $300 million, or you can risk going in front of a jury that'll give you 5% of the net worth of the bank to the rape victims. Because you're not going to be successful in keeping out that they and contend that they were raped. And by the way, what about the discovery in that? What if anybody in the bank had some relationship we don't know about with Epstein or one of his cohort? Because you're not dealing with Epstein as a unique entity here. There are the other people in the modeling business. There are other people around him. And this goes to the desperate need in this country to get serious about white collar crime.
So you've got a few viewer questions have come in. One's from Philip. What is the reason Deutsche Bank came to Trump's rescue in the 1990s and 2000s?
David Enrich, E-N-R-I-C-H, who's the deputy investigations editor at the New York Times, wrote a very good book about this that I recommend to you. He's an extraordinarily good reporter. His father was a law professor at Northeastern. I don't have proof of what I'm going to tell you, but I know how banking practices work. Imagine, Sean, your children want to start a business and they want, Dad, would you loan us $1 million? Here's our business plan. And you say to yourself, yeah, it looks like a pretty good business plan. It might fail, but I don't want to have the difficulties of collecting from my children if they flake out or their business fails. So you go down to your banker and you say, listen, make the $1 million loan to my kids. It's a judgment loan, but I will deposit with you a letter of credit for $1 million. And if they flake out, you can draw the letter of credit. The bank will be made whole. It's a risk-free loan because you've got $1 million to back the $1 million. These are known as back-to-back transactions. There is a distinct possibility that someone, maybe a Russian oligarch, maybe a front for the Russian oligarchs, set up such an arrangement. Go ahead and loan the money to Donald, and we'll make sure he's covered. Now, the head of Deutsche Bank, Joseph Ackerman, when he was forced out because of all of the Deutsche Bank scandals, what happened to him? He went to become chairman of the Bank of Cyprus, an island with a very large Russian expatriate community. The Bank of Cyprus, after the Deutsche Bank, was probably the most notorious Russian money laundering bank in the world. One of the two co-chairmen of that bank was effectively appointed by Vladimir Putin. Who was the other co-chairman appointed by? Donald Trump's first commerce secretary. So there's this enormous interconnections that go on. And, you know, even for me, it's incredibly difficult to follow all of this. By the way, somebody I noticed going by in the comments referred to me as Dr. Johnston. I'm not. I do not have a doctorate. I studied at the doctoral level, but I don't even have a college degree because I went to college for 8 years, earned enough credits for probably 2 master's degrees, but was denied a degree because I walked into college as a junior. I skipped freshman and sophomore years because I'd learned all that stuff on my own. I taught it to myself. And, you know, why would I take a basic writing course? I was 17 years old. I was making my living writing. And supporting my wife. I met 17, I was married and I had a kid on the way, and I support myself with my writing. I have an extraordinarily good education, but the only thing I have is a Knight High School diploma.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
So Ocean wants to know, what proof do you have of these serious allegations you've made against Trump and kids, teenagers?
So we, as I very clearly said, and I hope people heard, we do not have any absolute irrefutable evidence. And Donald Trump says it's a hoax now. He used to say other things. Right now he's calling it a hoax. But we do have an enormous amount that I've been talking about in this interview of smoke suggesting there's a fire here. The 12 children as young as 12 who were gambling in Donald's casinos. That's a proven fact. There were hearings before the Casino Control Commission. If you get my book, which you can buy for a buck or two now because it's 32 years old on the internet, Temples of Chance. That's what I call casinos because it's to many gamblers a religious experience. Temples of Chance. You can read the names of these children and how one of them, the father, was a police detective who tried to get the casinos to stop letting his 13-year-old daughter gamble. And he was just basically laughed at by in his face. We have Donald's statement, Donald's comments on the Howard Stern show, where he's asked, you know, well, how young is too young? And he goes, well, 12 years old. There are Jeffrey Epstein's statements to him. There are numerous photographs and video clips of Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein together. And there's no question that Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell were recruiting and raping underage girls. Court files suggest there were 1,000 girls, underage girls, 1,000 of them, who were procured and raped. And why did that happen? Well, you know, you have lots of young people who grew up in dysfunctional homes. Maybe they're victims of incest already. They've had been thrown out of the house for some reason. Whatever the problem is, it's not hard to find teenage girls and boys who are vulnerable and get picked up. When my oldest daughter was 12, I had her come from our home in Santa Cruz to my office at the LA Times in San Francisco on the bus as part of a growing up experience. When she got off the bus in San Francisco and was walking up Market Street, she was immediately met by guys known as chicken hawks who want to turn her into a prostitute. And good for her, you know, she said, get away from me to these guys and went forward. But, you know, don't be naive about the nature of exploitation of children in this country. We have Donald Trump's promise to make all this stuff public, and then it's a hoax. Well, I'm sorry. Why would you do that? After 1,000 Department of Justice employees, that's the government statement, not mine, 1,000 DOJ employees, many of them FBI agents, were assigned to go through the Epstein files and find references to Trump. Suddenly it's, no, there's nothing there. Nothing to see, folks. Nothing there. What that says, I think, to anybody who's not naive is there's a lot there to be seen. A lot. And that's why they're trying to change the tune. And they're in complete control of the information as of the moment. So there's lots of other stuff, Sean, that's out there. I mean, I think it's a reasonable question. And the caller or the poster presumably didn't listen to the beginning of this conversation.
What year was the Howard Stern?
I don't remember the year, but it's easy to find on the internet. There are people now who are posting these things. What I wish somebody would do who has the skill I don't is build a video timeline of all of these things with verified clips and photos. You have to be very careful on the internet these days because of AI and other manipulative tools that can lie to you. But there's lots of reliable, verifiable public record. When I teach journalists, the thing I principally teach my students is your job is to not hear some facts, but to then cross-check them and then cross-check them and then cross-check them and then cross-check them until you've done two things. You know where it belongs in the universe, because you don't want to take some little issue and make it sound like World War III, and that you have bolted down the facts so that nobody can dispute that you've given a rounded version to everybody of what is known in the record. And then you, of course, have to attribute all of that to verifiable sources.
So I agree with you that, you know, some of these things that you've said are absolutely disgusting and despicable. But do you think a shift in moral relativism has played a role in this? So, for example, I lived in America for 16, 17 years. I used to listen to some Howard Stern, and they just would say the most disgusting, shocking things to get a reaction out of people. And also in my own country, before I left my own country, one of the biggest TV shows here was Benny Hill, which started out with dirty old men chasing young women through a field in stockings and suspenders and pinching their behinds. And that was one of the most popular championed bloody TV shows over here back then. So do you think that morals have changed and you've got to put things in the context of the morals of I'm not trying to, you know,
but I think that the changes that have taken place in America since World War II have had lots of pluses and lots of minuses. You know, there's an old saying that I teach, and that is every solution creates a new problem. And from teaching young people since 2009, I can tell you that many of them had no moral training growing up whatsoever. The number of children who go to Sunday school or catechism or shul is way down. And we're not doing a good job of teaching the sanctity of human life and other values. And on the other hand, you know, at least for the moment, we live in a society where people of color aren't told this is your place and you better do what we say or we'll come after you. Women are no longer chattel property to their husbands. But the moral breakdown that I've written the most about in my best-selling books is at the very top in this country. The emergence of the tax shelters that I exposed, these absolutely fraudulent tax avoidance devices, which technically anybody could use, but the cost of them means if you can't afford $1 million for the fees because you're trying to save $1 billion, then you're not going to do it. And I've quoted leading people in both accounting and law as saying there's been a serious moral breakdown at the top in this country. That's where the moral breakdown bothers me. You know, there's member of Congress after member of Congress, including some Republicans no longer in office, who have all said that in private, large numbers of Republican senators and representatives will say, yeah, I know Donald Trump is a criminal. I know that he's a disaster. I know he doesn't know anything. I know he's doing bad things to the country. But if I speak up, I'll lose in the primary. He'll run somebody against me in the Republican primary. And we've seen that happen repeatedly. That's an example of a lack of moral courage. More than 1 million people died for this country, for this idea of the United States. What happens if we throw off a king and we decide to govern ourselves? Will that ennoble the human spirit and allow us to make great achievements if we do that? And if you are unwilling to risk your seat in Congress or the Senate because of Donald Trump says he'll run somebody against you, I think those 1 million people, and a much larger group that includes my father, a 100% disabled veteran of World War II, you're dishonoring those people. You know, I don't know if you've seen the memes of all of the photos people have put up of troops landing on Omaha Beach or Gold Beach during the Normandy invasion. You know, it's Antifa pursuing Nazis. But clearly there's a problem with moral education in America. I would not dispute that in the least, particularly as a father of eight, where I've gotten to see through my children's friends and things, lots of issues. I worry less about the sex part of this, even with Jeffrey Epstein, than I do about the financial degradation. Little fact I revealed years ago, every year for 30 years, I've done a big analysis of the three major sources of income data in the U.S. And one of those is actual wages and salaries. 2016, when Trump lost the election but won the Electoral College, the bottom 90% of Americans adjusted for inflation made 8.5% less income than they did in 1973. In other words, they only got paid through November. They had to go the whole month of December, in essence, with no income compared to their parents or grandparents in 1973. Now, in 1973, if you had a pension, about 45% of workers, or health care, more than half of workers, that was on top of your salary, on top of your wages. It was a fringe benefit. Now those things come in large part out of your paycheck. So when you adjust for that in 2016, people only got paid through the end of October. They went two whole months with no income. No wonder people are living in economic fear and terror. And on the other hand, an explosion of billionaires, centimillionaires, and they're everywhere. People with this unbelievable riches, far beyond any possible useful consumption of that money. I mean, frankly, I used to do a game with my graduate business students about trying to how much money can you spend if you have unlimited money to spend, but you have to work 50 hours a week, 50 weeks a year. Almost nobody could spend over $800,000 a year in consumption. The champion was my skinflint wife, who was CEO of a charity for 30 years. She managed to get it up to $5 million because she got the conceit. You don't buy a jet, you lease one and have it ready to go. You know, you hire a limo service so that there's a car ready to go sitting in the driveway 24 hours a day. Then you can run up the bills. But this worshiping of people at the top, the poor voting to borrow money to give tax cuts to billionaires. That's what we're doing in America under Donald Trump. We are borrowing money, adding to the national debt so that Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and Larry Ellison and Bill Gates can pay less in taxes. And Bill Gates, in fact, has said, if we had a proper tax system, my fortune would be one third the size it is.
Joyce wants to know if we can ever force these people to pay taxes equivalent to their earnings.
Any day of the week. My next book, the one I stopped working on 10 years ago because Donald announced and dropped it, I'm now back trying to finish, is a proposal for an entirely new federal tax system, which would work in any other developed country. It'll work in the UK, Germany, Australia. It's been gone over by a lot of experts, including tax administrators, very important people for a tax system, tax accountants, tax lawyers, business owners, and they all essentially say the same thing. They pick little pieces of lint off it or disagreements about it, but they all come back and say, this would really work. It would make the country wealthier by far. It would promote social stability, and it will never happen because the people who've learned how to turn the burden of the income tax into a profit center won't allow it. By the way, when I broke the story about that in, I guess it was 2002, that a lot of companies had figured out how to turn the corporate income tax into a profit center, New York Times was deluged with calls and complaints and, you know, who is this crazy person? You know, you don't make money off taxes. Congress undertook the biggest study ever done by the Joint Committee on Taxation, 1,800-page, three-volume study that showed not only was I exactly right, but at Enron, they put a rubber stamp on some documents in the tax department that said profit center. And by the way, I see you've got Paula up here. Again, Paula, I'm not doctor, okay? I'm not doctor.
Have you ever felt in danger doing your research?
Not about any of this. When I wrote about the LAPD, I was the first journalist to seriously investigate them when I was at the LA Times, which ruined my career there because the editors didn't want to go where I went. They had a worldwide spying operation. They had undercover officers in Moscow and Havana. There were undercover officers committing all sorts of crimes. The police chief assigned officers to sleep with women. The classic spy technique to get information, whether you're a male or female spy. Between the sheets, people tell you what you need to know. I was literally asked to go meet in an out-of-the-way place by a senior officer who thought my life was in danger. And I told him, well, I've got to do what I've got to do. But I immediately went and sat down and wrote a 31-page memo and put copies with five different people with instructions that if anything did happen to me, they were to release this. And nothing happened. But that and a couple of... I've solved several murder cases and a lot of other crimes. And I personally hunted down a rather vicious black on white killer once. And when I asked him about why he committed the crime, he said he needed to get something in his bedroom. And he got up and I decided to follow him because I figured it was probably a large gun. And he'd been in the joint, so he had big muscles and he was bigger than I am. But he just wanted to show me a photograph. He was basically a pussycat in a lot of ways. And this resulted, by the way, at the end of the day, in a young man who had been tried four times for the murder without a resolution. There was a fifth trial. My evidence was introduced by the defense. the jury acquitted the young man, and the real killer was called as a witness, but he can never be prosecuted because all the witnesses of the first five trials got up and said, yeah, it's this guy at the defense table, when it was the other guy. Those are the only times I particularly felt in danger.
Question from Anisha. Yeah. Do you think the Democrats would release the files if it means exposing the Clintons' corruption? Yeah.
If Bill Clinton is a child rapist, the Democrats are going to release those files. Clinton says, and I haven't seen any evidence to the contrary, that, well, he knew Epstein. He never went to, and he flew in his plane. He never went to his island. Bill Clinton is a well-known horn dog. The movie Anonymous, you know, goes into this in some detail with Allison Janney as the model person for this. But I haven't seen any evidence of Bill Clinton and underage girls. And that's the issue here. It's not sex with people who've reached the age of consent. It's underage girls. Or it may be that some of Epstein's clients were into underage prepubescent boys.
Do you think that the Clinton Foundation is structured to minimize paying taxes, et cetera?
Well, the Clinton Foundation is exempt from taxes. It's a foundation. But here's something very few people know. When there were all these accusations that the Clinton Foundation was doing corrupt and dishonest things, against the advice of counsel, the Clinton Foundation ordered an audit of every single invoice and check, every transaction. Usually the way accountants do an audit is they'll go through and we're going to take the 111th document in a file and then the next 111th document. That is, you sample. There are a variety of techniques for sampling. But they said, no, we're going to pay to have every single transaction reviewed. And they made the report public. And what the report shows is the kind of minor things you would have in your checkbook. You know, like I noticed the other day in my check register that I had entered something as a gift to one of my male children, and it wasn't. It was to his twin sister. That's the kind of absolutely minor, insignificant things that were found. So there's no evidence of that whatsoever. Now, did the Clintons use the foundation to enhance their position around the world? Of course they did. Of course they did. There's nothing wrong with that.
So Dawn wants to know, will other islands be investigated like Epstein's? I know we had the other guy, what was his name? The other billionaire out of Canada who
also on an island and did this kind of stuff. I don't know anything about that story, to be clear. But there's sex trafficking of minors all over the world. There are governments, basically monarchical governments, that we know are heavily involved in doing this. And so if you're the U.S. State Department, you know, you may well know that there's a bunch of girls from country X who are being trafficked in country Y. Then you have to look at, well, what are the national security and diplomatic interests of the United States? And how do you weigh the criminal conduct involving these children, which, by the way, may not be a crime in that country, against other interests? And that's the reason that the world is such a difficult and complex place. I do think that if we are successful in reviving our democracy and we get Trump out, that is not the end of the story. It is the beginning of a new chapter. We know now that large parts of our Constitution's rules to ensure proper behavior are unenforceable. Donald Trump is now flagrantly violating the Emoluments Clause, and he violated it throughout his first term. What happened when he was taken to court? The courts said, you have no standing. You have no legal right to bring a case. So it didn't get heard. I am in this class of people who believe that Donald Trump is ineligible to hold office because Section 3 of the 14th Amendment says that no one may hold any office of public trust in the United States, not just federal government, anything, state or local government, if they gave aid or comfort to an insurrection. Well, Donald Trump clearly gave aid and comfort to the January 6th insurrection. I don't think any federal judge will hear that case. They'll argue, who are you to bring this case? It's like if something's wrong in the tax law, you can't go to court. The court will say, that's not your purview. That's the purview of Congress. And having impeachment as the only solution for wrongful acts, criminal acts by a president is not, doesn't work. So we need to go in and strengthen provisions of our Constitution. Two things about this. One of the reasons that we don't have these enforcement provisions is that the framers, we don't have a great deal of record on them, but we have some. The framers never thought that an utterly corrupt person like Donald Trump would try and turn the federal government into a criminal organization. It didn't occur to them. They assumed honorable people. They recognized individual venality. And there's a very good book about this by Zephyr Teachout called Corruption in America. The Constitution was concerned with structural corruption. The problem is they didn't provide a means for enforcement when there's structural corruption. The other thing people should know is, you know, the Nazis called their regime the Third Reich. The French say they live in the Fifth Republic. Do you know what republic we live in the United States, Sean? Mm. Nobody does. We live in the Second American Republic. The First Republic was the Articles of Confederation. It failed after 7 years. Why did it fail? Because it had no power to tax. It was government by birthday cake fundraiser. And it had no power to regulate commerce. So we had trade wars going on between New York and Connecticut and Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And so a meeting was called to discuss what to do about how sandbars had moved in the Delaware River and the dispute that couldn't be resolved between Pennsylvania and Maryland and New Jersey over this. And it turned into the Constitutional Convention. The purpose of the Constitutional Convention became so that we could tax ourselves, something we don't teach at all, just as we teach that the Boston Tea Party was a protest against high taxes. No, it was the opposite. It was a protest against a tax exemption for the Friends of the King. And so we could regulate commerce. And Americans don't know their own damn history, even though it's all written down. It's not like you have to know some magical holy of holies secret. It's right there, but we don't teach that. People don't know that. I mean, tax is when I was the tax reporter at the New York Times, he used to say tax is the most vile four-letter word in America. And of course, it's three letters. That was part of the joke. But the whole reason we live under the Constitution is so we could be taxed. But that's not what we teach. That's not what we tell people. We tell these myths and lies. And it's like the textbooks, you know, that imply that the slaves who came from Africa were coming in search of a better life and to work and improve their morals and, you know, just absolute crazy nonsense history. So anybody else? Because we're sort of
Deborah wants to know if you could elaborate on the banker who died in Florida who was linked to Trump.
I'm not sure. It doesn't ring a bell with me. I'm sorry. But as a general rule, as I mentioned in referring to the George Clooney movie, Michael something, you don't go around killing people over civil cases. That's not what happens. Occasionally something happens. Barry Seal got assassinated over his knowledge of the U.S. government's role in drug trafficking in Central America. But if you avoid conspiracy, and I say this as somebody who's literally broken up conspiracies in my career, most what people think are conspiracies really aren't.
Yeah, I've written a book about Barry Seal called American Made. That was interesting. Okay. Iran Contra, Oliver North, Felix Rodriguez, right. The Bush, yeah, all that stuff. But anyway, you have been an absolute gentleman. You've been so generous with your time. Absolutely fascinating. Lots of food for thought here. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion to the viewers? And I've got all your links down there as well.
Keep pressing your members of Congress, regardless of the party they're in. You want the Epstein files. If they hold a town hall, absolutely press that, because we cannot have a child rapist in the White House, and we need to know either he is or he is not a child rapist. You know, just as Richard Nixon said, I am not a crook. And we now know that, in fact, he was a felon. He just was never indicted. He got a pardon. And if you doubt that, I'll point out to you, his tax advisor went to prison for the tax crimes committed by Richard Nixon. We need to know, is the president of the United States a child rapist and, much worse, a frequent serial child rapist? So you got to find ways to keep that alive, to demand that your authorities, your member of Congress who works for you, your senator who works for you, get pressed on this. And similarly, you know, very concise letters to your local newspaper or TV station saying, why aren't you telling us more about Epstein? This is an absolute important issue. Keep the heat up on this particular issue.
Well said. Like I said, all of the links are in the description box if you're watching this on replay. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you,
Sean. Have a great rest of your weekend. I'll let you go and close the show. Cheers.
Thank you, Sean. Bye-bye.
Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, folks. Thank you for all your questions. And like I said, the professor's links, I'll put them in the live chat again right now. He's on Twitter, website, book, etc. And I think we're back. Lauren's back tomorrow. I think she's got a two-hour show coming around 6 or 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. I've been on the road for a couple of days. It's been Ziggy's second birthday. Here he is. Here he is. He's just come running in. Whoa! Ziggy is no longer a baby. He's a toddler. He's a toddler. You're not a little baby anymore, Ziggy. What's this, mummy?
His phone.
This is his. He's got a phone now, folks. Is that your phone? Does it make noises?
Press the middle button.
Does it make noises? Wow, is that cool? That's okay. Cool. Is that cool, Ziggy? Oh, everybody's saying happy birthday, Ziggy. Oh, thank you, guys. Appreciate that. Yeah, so we've been up in the Northwest celebrating Ziggy's birthday, which is the same day as my dad's birthday. My dad was 77 and Ziggy's 2. But anyway, look out for Lauren tomorrow. I'm going to catch up on all everything. I'll be back soon as well. But look out for Lauren tomorrow evening. I think she's got a two-hour show planned. And thank you for all the birthday wishes. Take care, everyone, wherever you are in the world. Much love. See you in the next one, I hope. Cheers.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. Social Casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.